Major funding for Telehell is provided by Dave's Archives. At Dave's Archives, he personally transfers, archives, and preserves classic commercials from the 70s, 80s, 90s, and 2000s and shares them with you. Don't forget about his Friday night live stream on, well, guess when? Go to davesarchives.com. By RetroCirc on YouTube. RetroCirc has a whole new look and a new attitude as they bring retro commercials like never before. Always look for RetroCirc with a Q at the end. Bring your team with their team with RetroCirc, a Broadcast Plaza server partner. And by the very generous benefactors who grace us on our Patreon at patreon.com/telehellpodcast, including Ed Beatty Jr., Rhonda Farrell, Rick Kolacki Jr., Chris Michaud, Meredith Morrissey, Rabbites, Spare Parts, and Neil Weinstein. Thank you.
Okay, here's his to-do list. Feedings at 6 o'clock. Bathing at 6. Grooming at 6. Nail clipping at 6. Goes for a walk at 6. Poop scooping at 6. Give him a treat at 6, and then put him down for an NAP at 6. But whatever you do, don't say that word out loud. Spell it out or he's gonna go nuts all over you.
Jeez, that's a lot of slop. Why is everything at 6 o'clock? That's a lot to get done in an hour.
Because that's how time works around here, fuckstump. Every hour and every minute on Hell's Clock is always pointing at 6. In which case, use what little of your best judgment you have to figure it out. But seriously, spell out that word. N-A-P, don't say it. Or Cerberus is gonna use you as a chew toy. Oh yeah, that reminds me. Give him his chew toy at 6 o'clock too.
Down, down, down. Does it matter which of his three heads get the most attention?
Not really, since they all share the same stomach. But the one on the right has been a little moody lately, so be sure that he gets the chew toy first. Anything else, you know where to reach me.
I actually don't. All you said was that there was some business that you needed to take care of.
Well, if you must know, I gotta referee the annual poker game between despised world leaders. The main event this year is a four-way battle between Saddam Hussein, Idi Amin, Pol Pot, and George Steinbrenner. Whoever wins, I get to spare their homeland from atrocities for the next year.
Will you stop chewing on my pants? Wait, this is happening on the surface?
And one last thing. I was not kidding when I said that I did not want a single hair harmed on Cerberus's head. I'm trying to get him to look showroom ready when I try to enter him into the Westminster Dog Show this year. So when you groom him, be sure to use that shampoo that has the extra sulfur. It's not going to do anything for the skin and the coat, but the smell will knock out all the doggy competition and will make him winner by default.
Watch the tongue, watch the tongue, watch the tongue! Should we slap a PETA or ASPCA disclaimer on this episode?
It's audio. Who's going to know? Or care. It's not like you have any listeners anyway. Anyway, I gotta run. And as for you, Cerberus, you be a good boy. Yes, you better be a good boy. Ooh, who's a good boy? Who's my three-headed little boy? Oh, yes. What? Hey, don't look at me like that. Well, you never seen the Lord of Darkness say goodbye to his dog before?
I'll be honest. It's something I never thought I'd see in my life or death.
Just don't screw it up. I'm out of here.
Okay, it's just you and me, Cerberus, and since it's 6 o'clock all the time, let's start with your feeding. At least the boss treats you like any other dog, with dignity and like a member of the family. I'd hate to think that they'd ever treat you like the dog you're gonna meet in today's subject.
Isn't he something?
He's a brand new puppy, yet possessed by an evil from long ago.
You know, I think you're crazy.
Thursday, macabre mystery makes its presence felt.
Even a glimpse of the beast.
Surprising suspense hurls you into the unexplained.
Children!
Yvette Mimeo and Richard Crenna.
Hey, don't you see? It's them. It's my wife, my kids, that dog.
In the tradition of the Amityville horror comes the TV premiere of Devil Dog, 8:30 Thursday.
And now.
Give the devil its due.
This is Telehell.
Hey, you may have the same stomach, but give the other heads a chance to eat some, okay? Okay. So, this is one of those TV movies with a very limited backstory. But on the plus side, that only means that we can get through this movie a lot quicker. Which is good, because I want to take care of Cerberus's bill of lading before the boss gets back. The sooner, the better. And I also want to be clear here that this is not going to be a guilty pleasure. But considering I grew up watching MST3K, forgive me in advance if I treat this subject with a little extra cynicism. So with that, here's what I can tell you about this TV movie, and by no means is this comprehensive. This movie, which would air on CBS in the late 70s, is the story of a dog that gets possessed by the devil through a series of circumstances that will be explained shortly. It stars the Colonel from the Rambo movies.
In Vietnam, his job was to dispose of enemy personnel. To kill. Period. Win by attrition.
That lady from The Black Hole, among countless other films she did.
There is not it's not a romantic story, it's a big adventure story, but there are undercurrents of interest and romance.
And those two kids from those Disney Witch Mountain movies from the 70s.
Why are you using your powers against me?
One of whom later became a real housewife of Beverly Hills, but not before appearing in Hello, Larry, which probably means that this will be as close as I'll ever get to reviewing that show. But I digress. This movie was written by husband and wife duo Steven and Eleanor Karpf, both of whom would find better success creating and writing the 1980s soap opera Capital. Ask your parents. Directing the movie would be a man who is no stranger to putting B-caliber stories onto film, the legendary Curtis Harrington, known for such classic schlock as Night Tide, The Wormwood Star, Queen of Blood, and Whoever Slew Auntie Rue, among countless others. But just because B-movies were his bread and butter doesn't mean that he didn't do quality projects, too. Later on in his career, he would pivot towards television to direct episodes of Charlie's Angels, Beretta, Dynasty, and even the first Twilight Zone reboot that came out in the 80s. Given the subject matter, this might actually be par for the course for a guy like him. But there's only one way to know for sure. October 31st, 1978. Trick-or-treaters in the town of Haddonfield, Illinois are terrorized by a man wearing a William Shatner mask. The People's Democratic Republic of Yemen adopts its constitution. And at 9 p.m., 8 p.m. Central, we start things off with three well-dressed customers in a nondescript all-black vehicle discussing the kind of dog they wish to purchase from a neighborhood dog breeder.
She is as good as they come. She's had two litters already. Three of her pups are blue ribbon winners.
How much?
Truth is, I'd like to know why you want her.
We're not adopting a child, you know. We're buying a dog.
Afraid I'd have to have a minimum of $5,000.
She's the one.
And I'm sure these well-dressed individuals in black outfits have nothing but the best of intentions for...
Verbusse Sunday.
Verbusse Sunday.
Emanu, sonou, emak partak evatu.
Wow, I need a neck collar, because that transition just gave me whiplash. But yes, the movie doesn't waste any time in turning itself into what's essentially Rosemary's Puppy.
1,000 years since you were chained in the bowels of hell and banished from the earth. 1,000 years since those who would call themselves blessed defeated you. And now your time has come again. We have prepared. We have followed the law.
Perbusse sonde.
We lust for you, Father of Darkness. Send your demon, your son, your seed, your beast, and take your rightful place as master of the earth.
But here's the crazy part. Yes, I know, we're only 3 minutes in and there's already a crazy part. After this scene takes place, the people who are doing the possessing
are never seen or heard from again for the rest of this movie.
I mean it. They come in, they make their presence known, they do satanic ubby-dubby speak, the credits start to roll, and they're gone by minute six. Oh, speaking of which, come on, Cerberus, it's bath time. Lucky the boss's office is the only place down here with actual fresh running water. Now, where's that shampoo?
Oh, God, it smells like rotten eggs stuffed up of Rush Limbaugh's carcass.
Now I see why they want to knock out the competition at Westminster. Okay, hold still, Cerberus. I gotta make sure the shampoo gets on all of your heads. So anyway, the Satanists complete the ritual. And I'm also compelled to remind everybody that no dogs were harmed or inseminated with the spawn of Satan during the making of this film.
Send the beast. Send him now. Send him now. Barghest. Barghest. Come. Come.
Barghest. Barghest. Come. Come.
Barghest. Barghest.
Barghest.
Barghest. Barghest.
Barghest. Barghest.
After all that happens, we cut to somewhere in suburbia, USA. Given the palm trees and the California license plates, I'm gonna take a shot in the dark and say that this takes place in Haddonfield, Illinois. Richard Crenna picks up his wife, Yvette Menu, from work. And just as they head home, along comes a catalyst for this dog show.
Yeah.
Oh my God! Mike, it's Skipper!
Gilligan, little buddy, that's the most noble sacrifice anyone has ever made.
No, not that Skipper. This was the family dog that's found lying motionless in the street. And again, no animals were harmed or run over during the making of this film. But we gotta have some drama.
I was out watering my lawn. Skipper had come over to play with Prince. All of a sudden, he took off down the street. I thought maybe he'd spotted those raccoons again, so I yelled, but he just kept on running. Then this big black station wagon that was parked down by the corner started up, and I saw it hit him.
And he landed right in the middle of this big plantation.
I jumped in my car and tried to follow, but I lost it.
All of which is the worst possible thing to experience on one's 10th birthday.
Skipper never ran off like that before, Daddy. He never chased cars or anything.
No, but he did chase raccoons. Maybe that's what he did. Maybe he took off after a raccoon.
Charlie, how could you eat at a time like this?
Coping mechanism? I mean, people do eat when they're depressed. Present company included. But go on.
Sweetheart, you know Daddy and I said we'd get you another dog?
I don't want another dog, Mommy. If something happened to me, could you just say we'll get another daughter?
I think that argument might only work in prehistoric times.
We're gonna need another Timmy!
But hopefully they can still salvage the future Real Housewife's birthday as a random produce truck, which I'm certain was a thing back then, pulls up to offer the kids some fresh fruit and some puppies. As you do in produce trucks.
Look at these puppies.
Go ahead, hold it.
Is it okay? I mean, the mother's in there.
Oh, lady, oh, don't mind her. She's a good old girl. She won't hurt nobody. Go ahead, hold one of these puppies if you like.
Oh, he's really cute.
Go ahead, hold him. He ain't gonna eat you up.
Not yet, but it's still early. Long story short, just as soon as their old dog bites the big bone, a cute widow puppy comes in to take his place. And if my Scooby-Doo history is any indication, he's also there to bring in ratings with polarizing, annoying catchphrases. I wish.
I just think we ought to ask them first.
But it's my birthday, Charlie. I love him.
Well, now, if it's going to be a problem with the folks, I sure don't want to cause any trouble. Don't worry. There'll be plenty of kids who want this little fella.
No, please. We'll take him.
I guess it's okay.
Good.
So now the family gets to know the new puppy, who the girl decides to name Lucky.
Yeah, I was saving that name for my tombstone.
Lucky decides to make his presence known to the neighbors.
How's Bonnie feeling, Ben?
Come see for yourself. Look who's here.
Hi, George.
A new puppy. Well, Bonnie, I guess my present won't amount to much next to that.
Oh, Mr. Baskins, isn't he something? But I like your gift, too.
All of a sudden, Lucky's eyes glow a pale shade of green and causes the neighbor's dog to go nuts and mess up the family table. unlike Cerberus, whose eyes are constantly red. Okay, Cerberus, it's grooming time. Gonna make you look pretty, okay? Okay. Lucky then gets to know the family housekeeper, who, for audio purposes, we should tell you is wearing a, shall we say, piece of jewelry that's intended for the people upstairs. So naturally she has her doubts about the hellhound.
It's like a miracle. A man just appeared after you left and gave Bonnie a beautiful present.
Another one? Bunny, take the puppy outside. I bet you anything he's not housebroken. He's gonna make me watch the kitchen all over again.
Well, that's what she says in front of a child. Deep down, however, her actual thoughts are that the dog is...
evil! Evil!
But we don't get to see how evil just yet. The next day, the family goes out for a night of wholesome family activities, leaving the housekeeper alone to watch the dog that she's developed a bit of a negative reception towards. So much so that she does the one thing that typical cross-wearing types tend to do. Light a bunch of candles you'd normally find in aisle 16 of your local Stop and Shop and hope for the best.
Santa Maria, Madre de Dios, ruega, Señora, por nosotros pecadores, ahora y en la hora de nuestra muerte, amén, Jesús.
But all the wishing and hoping to the folks upstairs falls on deaf ears, as Lucky makes his move.
Santa Maria, Madre de Dios, ruega, Señora, por nosotros pecadores, ahora y en la hora de nuestra muerte, amén, Jesús.
He lights the meat on fire!
Even for a low-budget 1970s movie, that's pretty hardcore. I mean, Cerberus, you don't do anything like that, do you? You don't go out much because you're a domesticated indoor dog? Oh, you can't go outside until the boss triggers the apocalypse. Got it. So, naturally, when the family gets home, it's treated less like a tragedy and more of a curiosity.
Maria!
Two picks things up 1 year later. Little Lucky is grown up to a full-sized German Shepherd. A Shepherd who, not for nothing, seems to be adding to his flock. More on that in a second. Meanwhile, Krenna is working on a lawnmower while Lucky decides to make himself a little more mechanically inclined. And in a scene I can only describe as, "Stop mowing yourself! Stop mowing yourself! Stop mowing yourself!" Lucky tries to possess Krenna into touching the lawnmower blade
while it's active.
Fortunately, Krenna has more power than most and doesn't stick his hand inside the blade. Though, if it were me, I would treat it more as a fan blade just so I can speak into it to do an impression of Darth Vader.
La 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 Luke, I am your father.
So, after that bit of weirdness, this movie is surely a jest, we cut to the next day. Krenna has to work on a weekend, but he promises to make it up to the family.
Darling, why don't we do something together, all of us, tonight?
I'll tell you what I do. If I finish early enough, I'll take you all out to a Chinese dinner.
A succulent Chinese meal!
Meanwhile, the mother is looking to take the kids out for some weekend frivolity, only to come across an unusual hobby in her son's room.
I found this in your room. What is it?
It's just paint.
It looks like blood.
Leave my things alone. Get out of my room and forget all about this. I mean it.
What's the matter with the two of you?
Hey, I'm sorry, Mom. Really. I didn't mean to be rude, honest. It's just that we work so hard.
Well, that's a mood swing, isn't it? Granted, we could blame all of that on puberty, but that would be too easy. As we cut to nighttime and Krenna still at work, much to Mimu's increasing fear.
Mike, I need you here now.
Well, what's the matter?
It's the children. Where are you two going?
You know I said I was going to Susan's house down the street.
I got karate class tonight, Mom.
Oh, no, you
I
don't.
I can't miss the first lesson. I'll be back in a couple...
Will you wait a minute? Wait! Mike!
Look, I gotta go. I'll see you later.
So now it's just her and the dog. What could possibly go wrong? Considering our lead actress's name sounds like what a cat would say when it's being cute, she doesn't stand a chance against the hellhound. Translation: Yvette Mimieu becomes the prototype for Sigourney Weaver as the gatekeeper in Ghostbusters.
What? Where are you going?
To swim.
In George's pool at this hour? What if George wakes up?
Come on in, Mike.
There is no Mew Mew. There is only pool.
Oh, Mike, you can do better than that, Cerberus. It reminds me, I gotta clip your nails now. Oh, damn. Your claws look like a bag of factory-recalled bugles. I'll try my best, but let me know if I get too close to the nail bed, okay? So, after a spontaneous midnight swim, we cut to the next day, where the neighbor's dog is reacting the way the burnt housekeeper did when she, too, realized that Lucky was evil.
Prince?
That dog can sell anything.
I've had Prince for 8 years, and he's always been well-behaved.
Maybe he's just getting old and senile. A vet could put him out of his misery.
Betty, how can you say that? Especially since it's your dog that's to blame.
Lucky. Lucky's an angel. Lucky doesn't bother anybody.
Daddy, listen to me.
Lisa, dog is barking.
Which, unfortunately, can only mean one thing. Another reminder that no animals were harmed during the making of this TV movie. Especially in such cruel and yet off-camera circumstances.
What's this all about?
I'm glad you're here. That animal of yours finally killed Prince. I just found him dead.
Oh, just a minute. Lucky killed Prince?
I want that dog destroyed.
That dog was locked up in the house all night.
Don't you hurt our dog. I'll kill you, you old creep.
Bonnie, stop that. Stop that.
Hey, I think Kim Richards just auditioned to be a Real Housewife of Beverly Hills in that scene. But in all seriousness, the incident has caused the metaphorical broken fence between neighbors, and in some cases, straight-up litigation. But in this case, skip the litigation and go straight
to the death penalty.
George! George!
The poor dope. He always wanted a pool. Well, in the end, he got himself a pool. Only the price turned out to be a little high.
Yep. Even though they don't exactly show us how, the devil dog kills the neighbor by drowning him. Clearly, he must be stopped.
Unlike you, Cerberus, who can't be stopped. Okay, good boy, and boy, and boy. Clip your nails, groomed your fur, fed you your kibbles and soles, and time for walkies. Come on, boy, we got a schedule to keep track of. We gotta take your walkies. It'll literally take only 2 minutes to do. After that, I'll give you your treat, okay? Okay, now let me put on your... leash? Oh, fuck. Cerberus has run off. Give me a second to catch him, folks, and once I find him, we'll get back to this dog of a TV movie.
After the break.
Devil dogs are delicious, and I'm crazy about them because... I love that chocolatey cake and the creamy filling. I love devil dogs more than Marsha.
Drake's Devil Dogs are one of the delicious little cakes from Borden. But don't sing with your mouth full.
This week on Telehell's Premium Content of the Damned.
This little fat burner plan does the trick.
Grapefruit 45 diet.
Fat burner.
What would you rather have 3 times a day, this or this?
The Grapefruit 45 plan and our guarantee to lose weight fast without going hungry or your money back.
There's never been anything like the Grapefruit 45 weight loss plan. You burn off pounds of unwanted fat and get our money back guarantee. To save COD fees, have your credit card ready and call toll free 1-800-453-6900 or send $19.95 to Fat Burner, Box 15, Carlsbad, California, 92008.
The only way to listen to Telehell's premium content of The Damned is by becoming a patron at patreon.com/telehellpodcast for just a few bucks a month. you can listen to our premium content and get some swag along the way. Once again, that's patreon.com/telehellpodcast. And now, back to this week's torture.
Cerberus! Oh, Cerberus! Where are you, Cerberus? Come back, Cerberus, or the boss is really gonna rip me several dozen assholes! Cerberus! Where are you?
Oh, there he is, and... Gee, wonder what they have in their mouths. It's dino bones. How random. Try not to drop any of them on me and... Who am I kidding? I know my luck.
Okay. Go bury them somewhere, Cerberus, and let me know when I need to scoop the poop. I gotta finish the story.
Act 3 begins with a visit from... Cliff Barnes from Dallas? I didn't think we'd have a J.R. Ewing connection around here ever again. Though, in this case, the actor, Ken Kercheval, is not here to play a bumbling oil magnate, but rather a guidance counselor for one of the possessed kids doing what guidance counselors do best. Attempt to help while generally nosing around.
What has Charlie done?
I think he's hurt someone very badly. There's this kid, Bobby Afferton. He was running for class president. Very bright, dedicated boy. And everybody thought he'd win. And the day of the election, you must have heard this from Charlie.
No, we didn't.
No.
The day of the election, Bobby Afferton was found with a stolen watch in his locker. There were witnesses, said they actually saw him take it. Of course, the upshot was that he got suspended, lost the election.
Well, that could be any teenager going through puberty. I mean, it's not like he got possessed by the devil via his pet German Shepherd or anything. No, that's the plot. I'm just being facetious. Now calm down, boy. I'll give you your treat soon, okay? Guidance counselor Cliff Barnes may realize that there's more to this deceit than meets the paw. And Richard Crenna agrees.
Miles, I'd appreciate it if you could recommend a doctor.
Oh, nonsense.
Not just for Charlie, but for Bonnie, too.
The children are not going to a shrink.
You may as well hear this, Miles, but we've had a similar report on Bonnie just this last week.
I don't really think it's any of Miles' business.
Yes, I think it is.
Bonnie's fine. There's nothing wrong with Bonnie.
There is something wrong with Bonnie. She's lying, she's stealing, she's cheating, and she's manipulating them the way she manipulates us now. We've got to stop it.
But if she does, that means she will never get hired for Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. Nevertheless, this is being seen as a threat to the possessed, and the appropriate action is soon taken. Not the action you're thinking of, however.
I went to see Miles to talk to him about Charlie, to see if he might not change his mind.
At night? In that dress?
Yes, at night, in this dress. It just so happens I thought he might be more easily persuaded.
You tried to seduce him?
It just so happens that I care about Charles' future. I don't want to see him hurt.
I don't believe that. You wouldn't do it, even if you did. Miles would never fall for it.
Oh, God. That's great. Miles wouldn't fall for a thing like that. Miles did.
Well, you know what they say about here having no fury like a woman scorned. Even if it's a woman doing the scorning. But for the sake of there being a movie to pad out, Crenna wants to double check just to be sure.
Where do you think you're going?
Miles is my friend. Maybe he'll level with me.
Unfortunately, Crenna accidentally leaves the door open, leaving Lucky the chance to make more mischief. He shows up at Cliff Barnes' house where, for the first time in this movie, we get to see the Devil Dog in its true form. No pressure, Cerberus, but supposedly, this guy here, he's based on you. No, you don't look like a circus clown who just used an entire can of Soul Glow from Coming to America. Why do you ask? I'm guessing because they had a 1970s TV movie budget of $96.78, and that was the scariest they could make a dog look at cut-rate prices.
Oh, of course you're scarier than that. Why, I'm literally pissing and shitting myself in fear right now just taking care of you, boy.
Speaking of, looks like you need to do your business. On the wee-wee pad, boy. That's it. Good. Oh, wait. Hold on. I gotta get in the safety zone. Last time you dropped a deuce on me, it almost burnt off my foot.
Okay, now! Good boys!
I seriously need to learn more about the digestive system of a hellhound.
But good boy anyway.
Okay, so now Devil Dog scares Cliff Barnes out into the street where a passing car runs him down. And it suddenly dawns on Krenna at the start of Act 4 that maybe, just maybe, the dog is bad news. But first, ping pong!
I won!
Miles is dead.
I know, we heard.
Oh, come on, Mom, you promised to play the winner.
You don't think you're gonna beat me, do you? Don't you know I was girls' all-state champion?
Okay, quick sidebar for just a second. I've seen mood swing whiplashes in my day, but the ones that the family are expressing are so jarring that the Franklin Mint might run out of dimes to press so that the moods can stop turning on them. Here, let me play a little more.
Miles is dead. Haven't you got anything to say?
Yeah, nobody flunks English now.
Get out of here, both of you. Go to your room. Get out! Now! Get out!
A few weeks ago, we made a passing joke about how footage of war atrocities set to the song Sunshine Day by the Brady Bunch Kids is a prime example of antithesis. This and all the other 360 reactions throughout the movie are pretty damn similar in terms of tonal shift and dissonance. I know that's the whole point, considering the dog possessed them to be this way, but a little governing power in these mood swings would be appreciated. Figuratively speaking, you can't just go from baking cookies to cutting off one's car brakes at the drop of a hat. You know, build it up a little first, escalate. Anyway, it's becoming more evident that the Devil Dog is to blame for all these problems. So much so that it causes the family to take part in some impromptu family bonding. At 3 in the morning.
What in God's name is this?
It's just a picture.
You were up here at 3 in the morning, painting that picture?
Sure. You've never been?
Why?
So we could finish.
It's really rather good, don't you think, darling?
You out of your mind.
Children, bedtime. Off we go.
Okay, there's whiplash, there's tonal whiplash, and then there's J.K. Simmons in the movie whiplash. I'll leave you to figure out where that moment fits in. The notion of a family painting a three-eyed beast is more than enough to get the red flags raised, as Krenna finally tries to do something about it. But first, mental health break!
How long has this been going on? Ever since we got that new dog. The deaths of three people, friends.
You mean Miles Avery?
Yeah. And my next-door neighbor, George, his dog. Look, I know this all sounds crazy, but it's all true.
Things have been hectic at work?
Oh, no. Wait a minute. Norma, don't tell me that I'm overworked.
No, I remember on your birthday when the people down at the plant gave you a clock with no hands. You're not a clock watcher.
Oh, thanks for reminding me. Time for your chew toy, Cerberus. Okay, now I know the boss labeled them based on which head wants what toy, so... Okay, head number one, my little banshee. There you go. Number two, you get Mr. Pazuzu head. There you go. And number three, you get the squeaky Necronomicon. Oh, damn it, I should have brought earplugs. Anyway, the doctor recommends that Krenna takes it a little easy for a while. Just sit back, relax, and watch a little TV to take his mind off of things.
Mrs. Hadley, I know this is a difficult time for you, but please, can you tell us what's happening here?
I don't know. My husband never did anything like this before. Never. I keep telling them that.
Mrs. Hadley, how did this start?
It was the dog. He kept saying... It was the dog next door that forced him to kill all those people.
And the thought is just now occurring to me that this movie aired in 1978. 1 year after another infamous killer did his killing at the insistence of a possessed dog, so to speak. Was this movie supposed to be a metaphor for the Son of Sam killings? I mean, that may be a coincidence like any other, but evil dogs telling people to kill, and a news story like that very fresh in people's minds? You can't help but wonder. And we're not going to wonder any further than that because this is not a true crime podcast. Truth be told, I think Spike Lee's Summer of Sam did a better job of telling that story while downplaying the dogs.
The Son of Sam killer, who has been targeting young women, has caused panic-stricken brunettes to dye their hair blonde.
I feel like I'm cheating on you with you.
Anyone is a target.
But regardless, Krenna is now convinced of a connection at the start of Act 5, and is further convinced that something needs to be done about Lucky.
I'm sorry, boy. I'm sorry if I'm wrong, but I've got to do it.
But through all the power of synthesized flute music, all the bullets miss Lucky, and while Krenna ponders his future as an Imperial Stormtrooper, he gets the hear out of there and simply ditches the dog. But you know the dog doesn't just go away so easily in these kinds of movies.
Oh, hi, Dad. Where have you been? We've all been so worried about you. Lucky's been home for hours.
And from this point forward, it's not the mood of the family that whiplashes itself, but rather the rest of the plot, as we're suddenly thrust into a supernatural bookstore. No establishment, no explanation, just bam, bookstore, where the owner calmly and casually explains what's going on. Again, without any questions or any prompts of any kind.
Have you ever heard of the Barghest?
A creature of another world and another time, according to those who believe. It's a demon who appears in the form of a dog.
Is Lucky a Barghest?
It's possible, but there's no way of really knowing. You've got to see the Barghest in its true form.
In full-on doggy clown makeup like we saw earlier, if that's what you mean, but please, go on.
Perhaps you've heard him in the night. It's a sound that's just not of this earth. A sort of high-pitched shriek.
I'm having a meltdown!
This, Barghest, what does it look like?
He's got huge, sharp... He can leap about... Look at the bones!
Sometimes he runs with backward pointed feet. Sometimes he is ablaze. Sometimes he is headless. But even a glimpse of the beast in his true form will send a man to hell.
I warned you, but did you listen to me? Oh, no, you knew it all, didn't you? Well, it's always the same. I always tell them. Shut up!
Let me see that painting again you said your children made. Perhaps it can tell us something. It's a pity it isn't a one-eyed devil. One-eyed devil's not your brightest. But the three-eyed devils are all-seeing, the cleverest. I have never seen one like this before.
Good thing the boss only has two eyes. Now, come on, I didn't mean anything by that. Just keep chewing, okay? So anyway, Krenna's mission is clear. Destroy the dog by any means necessary, provided he does so while the beast is in its true form. But before any action can be done, one last word of caution from the shopkeeper.
Your children, they say if you are one of the blessed, one of the selected few who can oppose the forces of darkness, you may hold a mirror to the face of a sleeping person and look at the reflection. You then can see the true state of the soul if you dare.
Which is exactly what Krenna does, as he sneaks into his daughter's room just to see how much damage the devil dog has done to her spiritual self. Sweet Lucifer, he finds out that Kim Richards looks like
Kim Richards without her makeup on!
All the motivation he needs to book it on an impromptu research trip to Ecuador. Which, I know sounds like another plot whiplash, but they do establish this in a flimsy couple of lines just a few moments earlier.
Demon of unknown origin, painted on a cliff outside the city of Quito, Ecuador. Well, but that's all there is, isn't there any more?
I'm afraid this book is rather incomplete, but it's a start.
So, although this is still a jarring transition, at least it's still necessary to the plot, which does indeed take us to Ecuador, where Krenna, who must have millions and millions of frequent flyer points in order to pull off this impromptu trip, by the way, stares blankly at that etching in the mountain that he read about, much to a local cab driver's confusion.
The people that painted this have been dead for over 1,000 years.
I've come all this way. There must be somebody who can help me.
Maybe. I left that a long time ago, Mr. Barry. When I came down from the mountains, I don't believe that old stuff anymore. And I don't see how a man like you is going to believe.
I have to believe.
It's my great-grandfather. But he's a long way off. A long, long way. 2 days' drive, maybe.
Congratulations, Devil Dog. You may have just come up with the most contrived plot twist I have ever heard in any motion picture, either televised or theatrical. After all, what are the odds that you can not only afford to fly to Ecuador in a late 1970s economy, with a fuel shortage still going on,
find a cab driver that's willing to drive you out to the remote parts of the country just to stare at some paint on a rock, take that same cab on a 2-day trip to some shaman who happens to be a relative, and still be able to afford cab fare for that many days worth of travel? Shit! Even works of fantasy would look at this and think that this was implausible.
But it is only a movie. So we gotta suspend our disbelief. Never mind the fantastical nature of a dog being possessed by our boss, but also the expense accounts. So, yeah, we pay a visit to your typical old man of the mountain who bestows this advice on fighting the devil dog. Cue the South American pan flutes.
The beast cannot be killed.
There must be a way. I can't let him have my wife, my children.
You could leave his presence and be safe.
No. I have to destroy it.
It can be locked away for another 1,000 years, but perhaps at the price of your own soul.
Tell me how.
Which he does by essentially tattooing the palm of his hand with Bill Cipher from Gravity Falls minus the top hat, or whatever other representation of a pyramid with the eye in the middle can be. Shit, with that kind of logic, I'm kind of surprised Krenna doesn't just wave a bunch of dollar bills at the dog. But even that would be too contrived for this movie. So, we go through the inking process, and Krenna heads home for a final showdown, which is exactly where we find ourselves at the start of Act 6. Oh, 6. Almost forgot. Time for your treat, boy. Let's see. Where does it keep the treats? Oh. Are these your treats, boy? They look like souls. Bite-sized souls. Okay. The last thing I need is an unhappy pup. Okay, so here you go. We got a soul for you. And one for you. And one for you. Now then, after returning from home from a still financially questionable trip, Krenna drives home only to find the Devil Dog soundtrack piping up as it stands in the middle of the road. Just go with me on this one. After chasing the dog, we wind up at Krenna's workplace. And since this next sequence is 99% dialogue-free, I'll try my best to do a play-by-play. As Krenna drives into the heart of the plant, Devil Dog is on his tail. Tension continues to build as both Krenna and the dog sneak around the plant, ultimately resulting in them cornering each other, and this scene defies description. A plume of smoke and a bright light suddenly appears. The Devil Dog shows up in his true form and
After Effects can do a much better job than this. I'll put the scene up in the YouTube trailer. I promise I'll show it to you. Oh, but trust me. Trust me when I say that the Birdemic movies have more convincing special effects than this. Oh, and then you get to how stupid the dog looks. It's got plastic horns on its head, what looks like a black feather boa as its fur, its eyes glowing as if somebody's sticking a flashlight in its face. I mean, if this movie's budget came specifically from hiring Richard Crenna and Yvette Mimieux as the main actors, then clearly the remaining budget is showing in this moment. Oh, man. Okay. Composure. A moment which comes to an end after Crenna shows off his tattoo of Bill Cipher to the dog and locks away its damnation for 1,000 years.
I mean, are we supposed to be afraid of this guy?
Ultimately, the deed is done. The devil dog is turned into puppy chow and things are almost back to normal, as the family, now 100% demon-free, go on a much-needed vacation. And this plot hole is conveniently left open for us to ponder.
Dad, about it being over, well, there were 10 pups in that litter. Where do you suppose the other 9 are?
I can answer that. In no particular order, I can tell you that those 9 dogs went on to star in such heathen dog features such as Cujo, Man's Best Friend, Monster Dog, The Breed, Mongrel, Pet Sematary, Pet Sematary 2, the laughable remake of Pet Sematary, and of course, Ghostbusters. All of which were actual vicious creatures compared to what we just sat through, which I have to admit was the fun kind of dumb and also the dumb kind of fun. But I wouldn't exactly go calling this a guilty pleasure, which we will try to explain in the 9 circles.
Limbo, lust, gluttony, greed, wrath, heresy, violence, fraud, treachery.
Going by story content alone, we do need to mark it for violence due to the kill count that the devil dog makes throughout the movie. All of which is being done at the whims of our boss through intermediaries, who is not only using a dog as an instrument of heresy, but pretty much makes their living dispensing wrath around the universe. To say nothing of the devil dog's ability to be a playa, as upon possession of her, it gives Yvette Mimieux a heightened sense of lust from time to time. The dog is also hypnotizing most of the family to do some of its evil bidding. Regardless if this was meant to be a metaphor for the Son of Sam or not, this is textbook treachery. And that open ending implying that there are at least 9 more of these things out there somewhere creating more chaos and possibly creating hell spawns of their own gives the false sense that this may or may not have been the springboard to a potential series or series of TV movies where Richard Crenna seeks out these creatures with a team of occultist crime fighters. Or, I don't know. How about that cult from the beginning of the movie who started all of this? What was their backstory? Where's their comeuppance? How come nobody went after those freaks? Alas, the movie was only 2 hours long, 90 minutes with commercials, and that would have been too clever to follow that up with. That, and it might have been a red flag for the PETA people if the plot of a weekly show was to hunt dogs. So, all of those notions remain in limbo. At face value, though, this was stupid. I mean, stupidly stupid. That doesn't make it a terrible movie, but I wouldn't go placing this among the ranks of Stephen King or Wes Craven by any means. Hell, the guy who directed it made his bones making B-movies, so you kinda knew what you were getting yourself into before watching it, especially on a TV movie budget. That being said, man, does this movie try. It tries to be a legitimate horror thriller, but unfortunately, those primetime TV limitations ultimately prevent it from doing so. Devil Dog earned 6 out of 9 circles of Telehell.
with all of that said, if it sounded like I actually enjoyed what I saw in spite of how mediocre it was, why is this TV movie not a guilty pleasure to me? I mean, it had all the earmarks of it being a bad movie, but this movie does have its fair share of fans. That stuff with the evil dog makeup and bad special effects gave me a legitimate laugh, and then some. But I still didn't like how much of it dragged, as most TV movies tend to do. There was a compelling story in there, but the part where Crenna flew to Ecuador just to get his hand tattooed was largely unneeded. Couldn't he just find a local guy who does all that stuff? I don't know. Maybe I've been down here a little too long. I know, I find myself saying that a lot lately, don't I? And all the tortures that I've been given 99 times so far have kind of turned me into just another jaded, cynical, run-of-the-mill guy on the internet who complains about things while an evil entity is forcing me to do so. I don't know, just something's not right. But damn if I know what it is.
Ah, home sweet hell. Hey, how's my boy, huh? How's my little Leviathan? My awesome Asmodeus, huh? How are you? Who's a good Hellspawn? Yeah, you. Yes, you are. What? Yeah, who's a good boy? What? What are you looking at?
Sorry. It's still a little jarring to see a guy like you have feelings for anything.
That's just a stereotype. Of course I care about some things. I mean, why else would I spare both Tampa, Florida, and the Bronx from certain doom this year?
Oh, so Mr. Steinbrenner won?
Considering how much he stacked the deck to get world championships for the Yankees over the years, it didn't really surprise me that he did win. And before you ask, yeah, we allow cheating at our poker tournament. In fact, it's encouraged. Now then, let's see how you did taking care of my widow. Cerberus, you fed him?
Check.
Bathed him?
Check.
You groomed him?
Check.
Did the nails?
Check.
Went walkies?
And then some.
Gave them the chew toys?
Check.
And the treats?
Bingo.
Well, what do you know? I really thought you were gonna blow this one. But you seem to have a way with animals.
Well, to be fair, back when I was alive, I did used to work for a PetSmart when I was a teenager.
What? I really need to read up on our personnel files a little closer. Well, regardless of that oversight, I guess you did do a reasonable job.
Sure did. All that's left is for Cerberus to take his nap and...
So close! You did it, buddy. Yes, you. Yeah, you go get him. Ooh, who's a good boy? Who's a good boy? Yeah. Ooh, yeah. You got a new chew toy? Oh, yes, you do. Yes, you do. Yes, the narrator is a new chew toy. Oh, yes.
Next time on Telehell, I'm gonna be honest with you. I have no idea. It's gonna be our 100th episode, but the boss wants something big or different or unusual to mark the occasion, not just a run-of-the-mill review of a TV flop. What could I possibly do down here to build up that kind of hype on short notice? I've got it.
It's James Garner in his biggest role ever.
Hi, I'm your maker.
It's God, the Devil, and Bob. It's the ultimate battle of good versus evil. But how will God convince his chosen one that he's the real deal?
Until then...
If it's not in Telehell, it's not worth a damn.
The part of the boss was played by Darren Marlar, whose show Weird Darkness can be heard wherever you stream podcasts or at WeirdDarkness.com. Telehell was written, produced, edited, and narrated by me, Justin Hart. All clips used in this program are protected under the Fair Use Doctrine of the U.S. Copyright Act of 1976, and all clips used come courtesy of their respective companies and owners. Some of the music used in this program comes courtesy of YouTube and their audio library service. Telehell is a production of Horton Road and is distributed by Libsyn. You know that thing that people do in order to communicate with each other without actually having to look each other face to face? You know, social media? Well, we do that. Look for us on X, Facebook, and now Blue Sky. all three of them at Telehell Podcast. And don't forget to like, comment, rate, subscribe, and pretty much tell us what you think of our show everywhere that you can stream us. And also on our complaint line, telehellpodcast@gmail.com.